This is the June 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include University of Illinois agricultural economist Joe Jansen, risk management commodities Chuck Shelby from Lafayette, Indiana, and from Watseka, Illinois, and AgTraderTalk.com, Merrill Crowley. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, WILLAG. .org. Well, Joe Jansen, let's begin with you. USDA has released the grain stocks and acreage figures for the June 30 reports. Can you detail some of those numbers and what they mean? Let's begin with the grain stocks figures.
USDA showed both corn and soybean stocks down a little bit relative to last year, which you think might support the market a little bit. The one thing we noticed in that in those numbers was that, especially for corn, a lot of inventory still remaining on farm. Of the 4.1 billion bushels sitting in inventory on June 1st, the USDA pegged that at about 2.2 billion bushels on farm versus 1.8, 1.9 billion bushels off farm. And typically, by this point in the marketing year, we've moved a lot of grain off the farm, and that hasn't happened yet. To some extent, I think that's sort of a little bit indicative of just sort of what's happened to prices. Now, hopefully with those numbers, remember, are as of June 1st. So hopefully in the last month, significant amount of those old crop inventories have moved given the higher prices that we've seen, especially with those high prices have kind of been bid out of the market in the last month. In the last 2 weeks, really.
And then on the soybeans, as you look at those numbers, the on-farm at 323 million, off-farm at 472 million, total at 795 million left in the bin, so to speak. That's down from the 968 million from last year. Do they give you any indication of direction for the marketplace or something else?
Not much. I think we're still in a situation where, soybean stocks are tight coming to the end of the year here. But there's sort of a lot of other moving pieces, some much bigger factors at play that I think are kind of going to be driving soybean price dynamics going forward.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those much bigger factors, because there are some really big factors that we must deal with. The USDA also updated the acreage report. And frankly, going into this, the trade was expecting those numbers to stay about where they had been. In the March 31 prospective plantings report, that was at around 92 million acres for corn and about 87.5 million acres for soybeans. Farmers really surprised the trade, USDA, and everybody else, I suppose. Those numbers are now at, 94.096 million acres for corn. That's up 2.1 million acres. Beans were down 4 million acres. Those are some big changes.
Big swings. I mean, two things sort of simultaneously happening. One being a massive swing from corn to soybeans. And then the other thing being a decline in overall corn and soybean combined acreage. Both of those things, I think, were shocking the market. Shocked me, certainly. I don't think anyone sort of saw this coming. But that's the numbers that NASS put out today. Very surprising, very bearish for corn. But we've seen, the corn market kind of hang in there given this high number, an acreage number that's, one of the highest in history. And really the result of, swings toward corn and away from beans around the country. We're up about, 700,000 acres here in Illinois for corn, down about 800,000 acres for soybeans here in Illinois. So kind of Illinois story sort of matches really closely with the national numbers on this, but a big surprise in terms of both the swing and then this overall slight decline in total combined corn and soybean acres.
Yeah, planted acres for soybeans were down in North Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, as well, and other places too.
There's not a state that you can point to and say it's all their fault. This is really a national phenomenon, and probably the result of, you know, the relatively dry spring that we had. And we sort of tend to see that when we get a dry spring, we can get a lot of corn planted that, you know, where we may not have that same planting flexibility in some other years. And we had that this year, and the numbers suggest that we're going to see a lot of corn. Now, where do we go from here? This big corn number really kind of puts a dent in any sort of hopes of, you know, lower stocks to use, lower, tighter supply and demand situation for new crop corn, even in the presence of, you know, lower than expected yields. I mean, the whole story in the last month the market has been talking about is weather, and what does that mean for corn yield? But with an acreage number this big, we could see relatively large declines in yields and still come out of this with relatively abundant corn supplies.
What do these two figures, the grain stocks and the acreage numbers, mean for the July world agricultural supply and demand estimate? USDA rolls them in some form.
Certainly. I think, yeah, that new crop corn balance sheet is going to look very different. The open question, both for old crop and new crop corn, is sort of how does USDA quantify what's been happening to demand? I mean, we've seen and this has been a story for a long time. It's not news, but just sort of continued dismal news about demand for U.S. corn, acreage numbers that are, export numbers that are, you know, significantly below what we'd need to get to where USDA was projecting corn exports. And the export number that USDA had in their balance sheet for new crop is now looks very, very high. So both this surge in corn acreage combined with, you know, pretty mediocre sort of picture for demand doesn't look good in terms of sort of tightening up that corn supply and demand situation on new crop.
Anything else about these numbers that we should know today?
I mean, the one thing to note is that they're still subject to so much uncertainty. This is, survey data that's based on farmer surveys. We know that, and I think to the extent this is true, we don't know, but we know that, you know, response rates to these surveys are going down over time. There's a question about sort of how well is this going to predict what is the final acreage number, and ultimately what do we get when we get down to harvest? There's still a long way to go and a lot of news that the market needs to incorporate.
Thank you much, Joe.
Thank you, Todd.
Joe Jansen, of course, is with the University of Illinois. He's an agricultural economist here on campus. We're now joined by Chuck Shelby. He's at Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Chuck. Thank you for being with us on this Friday after the USDA reports. As we finished up with Joe, we were talking about how USDA would roll these numbers, the World Agricultural Outlook Board, into the WASD, or monthly figures that are coming up on the 12th day of July. I take it you have some concerns as it's related particularly to the soybean number and what such a low soybean figure for new crop in acreage and production might mean.
It's almost shocking, Todd. It seems like an unanswerable question, because at 83.5 million and they were using a 52 yield, you're going to really have to ration. The price has got to go up significantly. Otherwise, you're going to have to cut demand. So this is such a number that's so far away from where we were. It's I don't know how you solve that equation.
Well, the market will, and I suppose it's started by trying to push the soybeans higher. How many days higher do we have to go?
Well, when you run through the math, again, using a 52 yield, unless you're going to cut demand, which that's a function of a higher price. I don't know if I have an answer for that, but I think it's significantly higher than where we are today. And I think that's why the market's so strong, They run through the numbers. You do simple math, and you're going to have to go a lot higher.
Well, let me plumb this just a little bit. I think, and you can help me out, the size of the soybean crop in Brazil, and we know it's big, has not been marketed as quickly as it usually is by those producers. That crop, like the bulk of the U.S. crop, goes into the export market. Can it be fixed on the world marketplace? Will Brazil just step in as the higher prices come and fill that position?
Well, I think so. But again, at what price does that happen? So I'm not telling the producers not to sell, but I think we have an opportunity for a lot stronger bean market here and a lot stronger price for U.S. producers to be able to take advantage of. So, you know, the cure for this situation is the higher price, but you look at the meal side of the equation, U.S. meal replacing Argentinian meal, we still have strong markets. And then when you look at the biofuels and the bean oil demand that's upcoming, I think it speaks for higher prices. And again, it's going to be challenging for U.S. producers, but again, an opportunity that, you know, we really didn't think we were going to have. So I think it's a positive. It's just really uncharted water, I think, at this point for the market to digest these numbers and going forward, opportunities for producers here in the U.S.
Have you been thinking very much on the whole farm, and I know you have, version of this where we've got a corn crop that's going to be really big, probably, well, although it's impacted by drought, and we can talk about the derecho a bit as well, and what that means in terms of the total marketing plan. So do producers, if they have a crop, market sooner rather than later for corn and then work the soybeans for the profits? I'm just trying to figure out what producers might consider.
Well, it's been a challenging year, especially in the eastern Corn Belt here with the super dry conditions. You know, we have received some rain. Hopefully we're going to get more rain, but we're going to need rain all throughout the month of July to really, you know, bring the yields back closer to normal. And then you throw on top the problems with the derecho that's went through. So at the end of the day, I believe that we'll have opportunities in corn, but as a producer, you probably got to focus on that. If these numbers are correct at 94 million on the bean side, that may be a crop that turns into as profitable and maybe more profitable for corn at this point in time.
Well, what other things have you been considering after the reports today?
I'm trying to work with the producers and say, well, the bean market, again, opportunities, we got to be ready somehow to take advantage of that. Again, still here in the eastern Corn Belt, we're still concerned about moisture. We still need a lot of moisture to recover. So, you know, option strategies, put options are a good tool. On the corn side, if we can continue to get some moisture and feel comfortable with our crop, we may start looking at, you know, making some cash sales. Or at this point, I don't know if I want to use put options as far down as corn has dropped. So challenging. I don't really know exactly all the answers. This report here has got to be digested. It really kind of threw a lot of people, myself included, in the marketplace into, you know, having to sit back and do some calculations and really try to, you know, get a handle on this thing.
Joe Jensen mentioned, and we've been talking about it on the air as it's related to the grain stocks, that there was an expectation that there was a lot more corn in the farmers' bins, the old crop, at this point. That's what USDA showed. That was as of June 1. Do you think they marketed, or are they stuck behind the eight ball on the corn that they have left in the bin, and is it more than expected?
I think producers took advantage of the rally we had with the dry weather and moved a fair amount of what they had left. I don't think they're completely let it go, but I think there was movement. So I think that supply has shrunk a little more simply because they took advantage of the rally.
So then the follow-up question is, most analysts have been saying, go ahead and market it, go ahead and market it, go ahead and market it. Farmers did not. When do they now take advantage? Because, well, we're at that point where things are going to move quickly.
Yeah, with the report today, it kind of puts anybody who has corn in the bin behind the eight ball here, because these numbers at face value, if you're going to take the bean number the way it is, you're going to have to accept the corn number. So it's going to be challenging. Maybe the bean number is strong enough to help support the corn number. We did see China come in and buy some beans. It would sure help if we found some export business, and maybe with lower prices that would help. But anybody with leftover corn, you know, maybe you convert that over to an option strategy and re-enter it on paper. We still don't know what this final yield is going to do. Again, as the month of July plays out, we're really going to need a lot of rain to make up for the deficits we've got going.
In the Lafayette area where you farm, what are conditions like on the ground?
We've been fortunate to receive some rains over here that I know Illinois farmers didn't receive. We haven't got too much so far out of the current rain coming across, but decent shape. The lighter soils are struggling, have some real problems. Looking forward to see if we can continue to get some rain.
Anything else before I let you go?
Just a wild year. I think I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen beans be up 80 cents and corn down 20. So it's going to be an interesting year, Todd. Long ways to go.
Indeed. Hey, thank you much, Chuck.
Thank you, Todd.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. In Watseka, Illinois, we're now joined by Merrill Crowley. He's at AgTraderTalk.com. Hi, Merrill. Thank you for being with us. I hope your day's going all right. Busy, I'm sure. As we had that discussion with Chuck, we were talking about the export market, particularly for soybeans. China apparently in just a bit today. And I did wonder, along with him, whether or not soybean supply out of South America from the Brazilians could come into this marketplace and really fill the gap that, I don't know whether they can fill a 4 million acre gap or not, but can fill the gap that might be left by U.S. farmers. Have you been thinking about this?
Well, one of the things we're going to do is, of course, price is going to help ration what's happening here. And if you ration price here, that means you're putting the price up higher. And so that will encourage more acres in South America, in Brazil. We assume right now at this point that we're going to have Argentina back. So basically only what we have to do is get from now, our crop has to basically provide some beans for the time period between when they run out in Brazil to January, February, when the new crop beans start coming in. And through price discovery, I think we can see that happen. And that's, you know, that's the best thing I guess I can say. This morning they had bean prices in Sorriso, Center West, Mato Grosso, Brazil, 972. So they could stand to go up higher. I know their currency has been rallying, the real has been rallying, and against the U.S. dollar. So I'm sure we're going to see some sales there. And as wild as this is, and we don't usually have beans up 70 to 80 cents in one day, but we can move the beans $1.05 in one day. And so don't know if the gravity of it all is hitting the traders at this point, or if they understand what's going on and don't see a need to push it much more than that today. Also think that if we continue to see the beans rally, it should help pull the corn price up. So no one knows exactly how things are going to work out, but you take the demand that we have and the supply that we have, and we have a great supply there in South America. Then we bring in our new crop, even though it's going to be shorter than what we thought before. And then we have decent crops out of Argentina and Brazil next year. I think we'll get through.
So essentially you're saying that the gap in time is shortened up because the Brazilian crop this year was such a large crop that they can manage to fill more weeks into the fall. And then as long as they have a decent crop, they'll pick back up as early as possible in January, and the U.S. crop can just have a shortened export window, I take it.
Right. And of course, the key to that is, what are they going to yield? I mean, we've had this hot, dry weather. Is it going to work out like a 92, or is it going to be more like last year? And so we have that unknown that we'll see as time goes on. I mean, talking to the guys this morning, and they're saying shoulder high corn is tasseling, and they're not sure. And in past, that has not yielded well. The only instance that I know of specifically for that was some shoulder high we saw in 2012 tasseling, and a guy was riding with me, was an agronomist from one of the seed companies, and said that won't do better than 50 bushel per acre, maybe 100 if he's lucky. And I happened to know the farmer, and I happened to see him in the fall, and they said that he said his corn, the lowest yield was 150. So, you know, depending on what weather we finish out with, you know, that can change a lot of what ifs and maybe not make things quite as tight as what people are looking at right now.
There is a good article on the FarmDoc website and up on the Twitter feed at willag.org if you want the direct link from Emerson Nafziger about drought conditions in the state of Illinois and what that does mean for corn as it's developing. Emerson, I know, will say short corn doesn't make that much of a difference. It really is about the nick, and that'll happen probably in the next 3 weeks. And so we're going to have to see whether the silks and the tassels actually come out at the same time. That'll be important to watch. Is there any historical context that you can give us for the size of the crops that are now expected from the acreage that USDA released to us today?
Well, I can give you some years. The soybean planted acreage is similar to 2019. However, 2019 was greater. Now, that's the only year that I saw on the charts. Let's see, how far back did they go? Planted acreage went back to 1989. So that was about the only year that we saw stocks about the same. There was another large change in 2007 for the soybeans. Now, the corn planted was similar to 2007 and 2013. 2009 and 2019 were greater increases, with 2019 being much greater. Then there was 9 years greater than the decrease for the soybean stocks. So this is evidently not uncommon for the stocks anyway. 1996 and 2010 had greater decrease in the corn stocks. So there is some historical preference or precedence for that. And I haven't had time to go back and see what the, you know, yields and ending stocks and ending carryouts were for those years.
Do you have some technical chart points or things that producers or you are watching at this point as it relates to the movements in the grains and the oil seeds?
Well, if you're looking at some of this, before we had this report, the 5/30 December corn price was probably discounting a yield of 172 to 174. And even though it's really early for soybeans and trying to give you a number for soybeans, discounting something between 47 and 48. And again, that's too early to really tell on the beans because they're due in August. The 5-day sell-off in corn and wheat ahead of today's report was the largest on record, nearly double the losses of the prior record in 2010. The month ago for May corn, which was at 521.5, we break that, then we're going to have a reversal lower for corn, a monthly reversal lower, not good. 1285.5¾, if we close above that, gives us a 2-day reversal higher for a monthly reversal in soybeans. So that's encouraging. Corn did fill its gap down to 528, and the open interest is now the lowest since 2017. November 30th is the next cycle low I have for soybeans. I do have what I call a triple low due for corn in 2024. Now, those are yearly, 3.9 and 27 yearlies. So it could back far enough to be a low in October. We just have to see how the weeklies turn out then from this point on. I was thinking we had a low to retrace from. The 382 retracement of soybeans was 1303. We basically popped up to there. The 618 retracement is 1331 off of our big decline in the market. These are Fibonacci retracement numbers. Corn with a weak market retracement from the low we had day before yesterday is 550¾ to 565. A 50%, which corn likes to retrace 50%, is 578. So Then weather-wise, Commodity Weather Group says we're probably going to take this 35% dry area that we have now, and with the forecast in the next 10 days, reduce it to around only a quarter of the acreage being in drought. 2 to 3 inches of rain coming in the next 10 days. So,
anything for farmers in the way of advice at this point to offer to them as they're trying to market what they have left of old crop, probably corn only, or in the new crop at all?
Well, you know, I don't know what's going on here with these inverses and these prices, because it just doesn't make any sense. Today is first notice day on the grains, and we have inverses of at the close this morning break, we had an inverse of 61 cents for corn and 2.11 for beans. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense now with the yield and everything. That's going to really tighten things up, and then that would kind of make sense for that inverse. But, you know, it either tells us that we're not understanding how big the crop was or how small the crop was last year, or we're just not getting a good reflection of what's going on in the marketplace from the Chicago Board of Trade. In other words, we're not seeing true price discovery.
Hey, Merrill, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Great to be here.
Merrill Crowley is with AgTraderTalk.com out of Watsiki, Illinois. He, along with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and University of Illinois agricultural economist Joe Jansen, joined us for our Commodity Week program. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Again, thanks go to our panelists. They included Merrill Crowley, Joe Jansen, and Chuck Shelby. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media is a joint production of IPM and University of Illinois Extension. You may always find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find this program, Commodity Week, along with the daily closing market report and the opening market report, a midday report as well, and information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist here on Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's all at willag.org on demand anytime you'd like, or you can search Commodity Week or the Closing Market Report out in your favorite podcast application.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Average temperatures range from the low to high 70s this week, around 1 to 2 degrees below normal in northern Illinois and 1 to 2 degrees above normal in southern Illinois. Most places saw a few days with highs in the 90s, and a few spots in southern Illinois reached or exceeded 100 degrees this week. This included Carbondale, which hit 100 degrees for the first time since 2012. Now, June as a whole will likely end within 1 degree of normal statewide. Now, until yesterday, the big weather story this week was the air quality, which was some of the worst the state has seen in many years. Wildfire smoke from Canada blew into the Midwest, increasing particulate matter in the air and spurring air quality warnings from Chicago to Mount Vernon. That was a big story until much of central Illinois was hit by a very strong series of storms yesterday, likely a derecho, that brought extremely strong winds and caused quite a bit of tree damage and building damage and flattened corn in several spots. Wind gusts were measured or estimated exceeding 80 miles per hour from the Iowa to Indiana borders, including a few spots estimated 100 mile per hour gusts in Warren, Hancock, and McDonough counties. Thousands remain without power across central Illinois as cleanup continues. While most folks would have preferred a different mechanism, the storms did bring rain across a very dry area. Widespread totals exceeded 3/4 of an inch from the Quad Cities to the Indiana border, including a few spots of over 2 inches around Bloomington Normal and west of Terre Haute. While not a drought buster, the rain was a good way to eat away at some of those longer-term deficits and help crops along as we move into the heart of the growing season. Forecasts indicate continued active and stormy weather across Illinois over the next 7 days, with widespread forecasted totals exceeding 1 inch. Some storms this weekend and early next week will be severe, but are unlikely to be as strong as what we saw yesterday. Outlooks for the second week of July are actually leaning cooler and wetter than normal, which would be beneficial in what is a critical time of the season for crops. Also helpful are forecasted persistently southerly and westerly winds, which should cut down on wildfire smoke moving into the area. So as long as you can dodge the spotty storms, you should be able to enjoy outdoor time on the 4th of July. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford, wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.